The next case is 04-1395, disciplinary counsel versus Robert Beeler. Ms. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Lori Brown, counsel for Relator Disciplinary Counsel. Relator has objected to the Board of Commissioners' opinion in the Robert Beeler case. We have objected to the sanction suggested by the board. The board recommended a 24-month suspension, with 21 months of that suspension stayed, so the actual time off would be 3 months. The board also recommended a probationary period or a monitoring period, which would encompass several different stipulations and suggestions for monitoring, all of which we do agree with, that Mr. Beeler should be subject to those conditions. In order for this court to impose the correct sanction in this case, it's important to have an understanding of some of the factual issues. I'd like to discuss some of those issues at this time. First of all, in his argument to this court, the respondent asserts that he filed the 1993 will of George Ann Kinsley because he believed it to be valid. That argument is not supported by the evidence in this case. Mr. Beeler stipulated, stipulation number 7, that the 1993 will was witnessed by a secretary outside the presence of George Ann Kinsley. He also stipulated at number 32 that he explained that to Jackie Predmore in 2001, shortly after he filed the 1993 will. Any argument that he did in fact believe the 1993 was valid when he filed it is further contradicted by the fact that he testified at the disciplinary hearing that he determined he should file that particular will after a discussion with Jackie Predmore and Judy Ann Ashley, her granddaughter. So there is no support for the argument that he believed the 1993 will was valid at the time he filed it. The second argument that is contradicted by the facts of this case is an argument by Mr. Beeler that he filed the 1993 will because he believed it was consistent with George Ann Kinsley's wishes for her estate. An analysis of the documents in this case will convince the court that the 1993 will, combined with any of the deeds or any of the other documents created by the respondent in this case, simply do not comport with the respondent's view of what George Ann Kinsley's wishes were. That argument completely contradicts the evidence in this case, and there is no support for it. What's so important about that distinction is that it goes to the heart of this case. The respondent has yet to recognize that this is a big picture case. This is not about specific details, although I've given the court several details in my argument thus far. The big picture of this case that's important for the court to realize is that the respondent created three wills for George Ann Kinsley, a 1993 will and two 1996 wills. None of those wills were valid. They were never valid. He also created two warranty deeds and a quitclaim deed. Those were never valid. They were not properly executed. He then created an affidavit and another warranty deed for Jackie Predmore and her husband, Gordon Predmore. Those were not valid either. So when you look at count one in this case, you need to look at the big picture. And the big picture will tell you, in addition to all the little facts that are contradicted by the evidence, that respondent committed misconduct on numerous occasions over a period of several years, beginning in 1993 with the first will, until after George Ann Kinsley's death in November of 2000.
Counsel, was there any selfish motive here, or were there any close relatives of Mrs. Kinsley who were shortchanged by reason of his activities?
Mrs. Kinsley had one daughter, that's Jackie Predmore, and there were two grandchildren, Judy Lynn Ashley and John Brennan. When all was said and done, first of all, let me tell you this. As pointed out by the panel chair during the hearing, Georgianne Kinsley actually died intestate. She died without a valid will. So if her property were to pass according to Ohio law, if she died intestate, it would have all passed to Jackie Predmore, all of it. If she had died according to the terms of the 1993 will, if that will were valid, it would have also all passed to Jackie Predmore. So either way, it ends up passing to Jackie Predmore. Now, what Jackie does with it during her lifetime, you know, is another question. There are no other heirs, if I've answered your question. Jackie and the two grandchildren.
As a result of his failure to get these documents properly executed, nobody came up short. The tax man collected some money that might not have been collected.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, which raises another issue in this case, and that is the fact that because Mr. Beeler apparently believed that he could transfer Georgianne Kinsley's property posthumously, right. He could record the warranty deeds.
And he paid some money.
He did. He paid Jackie Predmore money. Yes, that's correct.
So the clients have been made whole and then some, I take it.
Well, not necessarily and then some, because okay. Jackie Predmore was the heir by operation of law because there were no
sure.
valid wills. So if she had inherited property that is valued according to, I believe it's Exhibit 10, the real property was valued at over $200,000. She obtained a life estate in the property, in part of the property, in the Orchard Lane property, and then she was paid $68,000. So there's quite a difference between inheriting property in fee simple valued at over $200,000 and a life estate in $68,500. So there is some difference there, that's correct, but Jackie Predmore absolutely agreed to that settlement agreement. So, you know, she has been made whole from her perspective. She was represented by counsel in that, so she did hire counsel,
right.
And the estate took a number of years to close.
I guess what I'm trying to discern here is this is a lot of negligence.
That's correct.
But as far as we can tell, there's no selfish motive. It's just ineptitude.
Ineptitude, yes, and that's the violation of 6101A2.
Right.
Yes.
I understand that. And is there more than that?
There is, obviously, there's a violation of 1102A4 in the sense that the respondent knew that Ohio law required him to have two witnesses to documents such as deeds and wills.
Okay, but so does every banker in this state, and they've run over to the General Assembly and tried to get a whole lot of mortgages blessed that they failed to get two witnesses on. And we've had to deal with all the litigation surrounding that.
In this situation, Your Honor, we have first of all, an estate involving Georgianne Kinsley, and we also have, by respondent's admission in count number two, that there are other clients who are victims of the same negligence, if you will, and dishonesty. Whether respondent did it, as he testified at the hearing, as a courtesy to his clients, he had, it's a farming community, he went out to various people's houses, didn't make them come to their office. He testified sometimes they would stop by the office and there weren't enough witnesses there. There's all kinds of situations that he testified from his own perspective, he did it as a courtesy. Doesn't change it. The law requires two witnesses, the rules require two witnesses. Him to follow the law, that's more correct.
Well, there's an issue of, isn't there an issue of alcohol dependence?
There is, Your Honor.
Do you think that's why the board gave him, recommended only 3 months off? 3 months off, really, is we don't usually, the entry that I signed telling someone they're suspended gives them 60 days, I recall, to advise clients and get their files to them. We usually do not suspend someone for 3 months, because it's impractical. It just, by the time the suspension is effective, the person's back in the practice. I'm surprised, right, because the board recommended only 3 months off in this case. Is it because of the alcoholism?
That our argument is that it's either because they placed too much weight on the alcoholism as a mitigation factor, or they started from the wrong point and reduced the appropriate sanction from that point downward. But I totally agree that the minimum sanction generally recognized by this court is a six-month suspension or a six-month state suspension. Other states sometimes use 90 days, but that's not practical, as you pointed out. The other point with regard to respondents' mitigation, we are not disputing the credibility of respondents' mitigation witnesses, not in the least, Mr. Sakash and or the character witnesses that testified. In fact, they were entirely credible. And the problem is that the import of the testimony, which this court should recognize, none of the character witnesses, two clients and two professional gentlemen who had a business relationship with the respondent, testified that they had never seen him impaired. One of the Judge Steve Schuff testified on behalf of respondent, he had no idea that respondent had an alcohol problem until 2 weeks before the hearing. So relator's position in that regard, and we don't doubt that Mr. Beeler is in fact a member of OLAP, goes to AA, and has an alcohol dependency problem. However, our position is that the board placed too much emphasis, placed too much weight on that as a mitigating factor. That does not mitigate all of the misconduct in count one, six violations, and in count two, multiple counts of multiple times of three different violations.
Counsel, what is the connection between this alleged alcohol problem and the behavior here? And from what I'm gathering, the behavior potentially in other probate issues, and who knows, real estate transactions that were improperly witnessed. Is it an allegation that the alcoholism impaired judgment and he decided to take the easy road when it came only to witnessing documents? Because, as you said, the testimony by the character witnesses, he was a good attorney representing people in business without any detriment to their clients. So I guess I'm missing the connection here.
The connection is, as you suggested, Your Honor, that he was impaired, he was alcohol dependent, and all the attendant circumstances to that, drinking during the day, not following through on responsibilities, perhaps being sloppy. There is testimony by the respondent that when he decided to file the 1993 will, he knew there were two 1996 wills, but he had no inventory for file. He had no means to keep track of what he actually had for various clients, and he didn't start making changes until shortly before this disciplinary hearing came, or this disciplinary process began. His testimony was that he has, in fact, started making changes, you know, which does call for some mitigation in the recommended sanction.
Counsel, I'm wondering why you say that 18 months is the appropriate sanction here. You did just suggest that as we looked at the board's recommendation, the board has given a very lenient sanction as its recommendation, and you've also stated that generally 6 months is the lower end, and yet without understanding the details, you say 18 months is appropriate. How do you come to 18 months?
We come to 18 months a couple of different ways. First of all, the number of violations and the numerous counts of 1102A4. Even if you take into account pure numbers, there's three wills and two warranty deeds, one quick claim deed. Each one of those times, he led George Ann Kinsley to believe that she was executing a valid document when he knew she was not. He also, in that situation, she had heirs that she expected her wishes to be followed. At some point, during the hearing, the respondent testified that after George Ann Kinsley executed two 1996 wills, he expected her to call him and tell her which of the wills she wanted to be in effect. She never did call him, and ultimately he filed the 1993 will instead. I mean, the volume of misconduct in this case, the sanction should reflect that misconduct, the seriousness of it. The respondent argues that there is no need to protect the public from Mr. Beeler in this case, or any cases like this. This court will recall that in our brief we pointed out that the respondent testified that he has 4,000 wills in his office and potentially 200 family trusts. Those are situations in which Mr. Beeler you know, there is no evidence to support that any of those, other than what he stipulated in count two, are in fact invalid. But this is a case with voluminous misconduct. This is a case that calls for an 18-month suspension, followed by a period of probation. The case law that is cited by Relator's brief, particularly the Miller case, the Sparrows case, the Bandy case, those are all instances where it was one estate or one will that was improperly witnessed, or in the Sparrows case, one document that was filed in the court. This is a situation where the respondent filed a will that he knew was invalid, two warranty deeds that were invalid. He had his clients executing documents and then having them witnessed outside the presence. The misconduct is much more voluminous than in the cases where this court has ordered a one-year suspension in Miller, 6-month suspension in Spiros and Bandy.
And in those other cases, there was no personal benefit to the attorney involved?
In the Bandy case, there would have been a benefit to Mr. Attorney Bandy. However, he waived that at the end. The Spiros case, no. Ultimately, there was no benefit, nor in the Miller case.
Thank you.
Has anyone reviewed the other wills that he has, the 4,000 wills you mentioned, to determine whether they were invalidly executed?
We did not look at every one of those wills, Your Honor. The respondent admitted that he did, in fact, have some. I don't know that the respondent even knows. I'd like to reserve remaining time, for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Weber.
May it please the court, Ms. Brown. Mr. Buehler is seated at council table this morning. I guess I'd just like to start with expressing a little bit of surprise by Relator's position in this case with respect to sanction of 18 months. A couple of points. First, Relator did stipulate to virtually every mitigating factor that this court considers in disciplinary cases. That was by stipulation. That was after having deposed Mr. Buehler. Secondly, Relator dismissed multiple violations before the hearing itself. Specifically, there's several DR-7 violations that were dismissed before the hearing. DR-7-101-A1, which is intentionally failing to seek the lawful objectives of a client. DR-7-101-A3, intentionally prejudicing or damaging the clients. DR-7-102-A5, knowingly making a false statement of law or fact. DR-7-102-A6, participating in the creation or prosecution of evidence he knows is false. Those violations were pled and then dismissed before the hearing. The last point I'd like to make on this issue is, at the conclusion of the hearing before the panel, Relator acknowledged that it is not likely that this misconduct would occur again. And I think that's an important point when we talk about sanction in this case. As I read Relator's brief, what stood out to me was a challenge to the mitigation evidence, notwithstanding a stipulation to those points earlier, and also the Mr. Buehler's state of mind. As to his state of mind throughout this, alcoholism played a significant role, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the evidence that was adduced at the hearing on that. He did not intend to deceive anybody. It was stipulated that he acted without a selfish or a dishonest motive. He's not a dishonest guy. He filed the 1993 will believing that it was valid. It had been improperly witnessed 8 years before it was filed. That's a long passage of time. Given his alcoholism, he did not recall back to 1993 as to whether or not that was a validly witnessed document. Coupled with the fact that Ms. Kinsley had been in and out of his office during that time period to execute documents, and he simply lost track as to whether or not that document was properly witnessed. The alcoholism that was at issue, there's a question
It's pretty hard to buy the argument that he forgot that he didn't have 8 or 9 legal documents properly witnessed. I mean, I could maybe understand one in 93, but there's a whole series here. And that's very troubling because everyone keeps saying, well, it was just negligence. There's more than negligence involved. There's an overt conscious decision made to file something that he knows wouldn't stand up if it were challenged. And that, to me, I'm having a hard time with just saying this is just negligent or just alcohol-related. There were conscious decisions made over a very long period of time.
We would respectfully disagree with that position. Again, based upon the testimony that was adduced at the hearing by George Sakash. Mr. Sakash is a licensed chemical dependency counselor with 21 years of experience. He'd counseled, I think, more than 2,000 clients on alcohol abuse. A very, very qualified practitioner in this field who had treated Mr. Beeler, who knew his condition, and he did testify that Mr. Beeler's battle with alcoholism impaired his judgment, impaired his reasoning, impaired his memory. So it greatly affected the conduct that was at issue in this case.
How does that square with the argument that he was doing this as a courtesy, so it would be convenient for the client? That doesn't square with the alcohol impairing his judgment argument. They're kind of almost contrary to each other.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, Your Honor. He was cutting corners. He was trying to do clients a favor. He knew better that these documents need to have two witnesses present when they were being executed. I think had the alcohol not been involved, he would have realized that he needed to stop right then and there, bring these folks into his office, or bring a secretary to the client's home and handle it properly. But I think that's the nature of the alcoholism, as Mr. Sakash testified, that it impairs that judgment that a lawyer must take the requisite steps to handle these situations. The alcoholism negates that. Ms. Krasnarch with OLAP confirmed Mr. Sakash's findings. Mr. Beeler knows what he did in this case is not right. He has vowed it will never happen again. Again, Relator's Counsel, I think, acknowledges it won't happen again.
Counselor, let me ask you a question. The witnesses testified that he was a competent attorney, and they felt comfortable and confident in his representation of them, small business. The judge, testified as to his performance as a legal professional. Nowhere was it evidence that he was impaired by alcohol in those areas of his professional life. Are you saying that the only time the alcohol intervened here is when it came to witnessing documents?
Not at all. No, he was a classic alcoholic, hid alcohol under the car seat. I'm sure it impacted his day-to-day life, his day-to-day practice. No
but
question.
The only evidence we have here is his inability to follow the law when it comes to witnessing documents.
Well, thankfully, it didn't lead to a whole host of other problems. And I suppose that could be sheer luck. But certainly it did impact the situation at issue here. Again, as it related to trying to accommodate a client and not taking the step, not stopping and taking the steps to get these documents executed properly. But his alcoholism was pervasive throughout his entire day-to-day life. There's no
question
about it.
And how long was this alcoholism manifesting an impairment on his performance?
I believe the evidence was dating back to the early 90s.
And so then it would be probable that of the 4,000 documents that he has in his office, a substantial portion of those would be problematic in their witnessing.
I don't think that would be the case, Your Honor. Mr. Beeler has looked back at his files to determine, and by the way, I don't know that it's 4,000 wills. I think the testimony had 4,000 clients, realizing a large part of his practice is probate and estate planning. He has gone back and looked through the files, particularly those clients where he would make house visits, if you will. To go back to make sure that the documents were in proper order and has made some changes to documents that he believes may have contained some problems. So he has taken those steps to rectify that situation, and he's been open and honest throughout this case about that. He is committed to sobriety. He continues to fulfill all of his OLAP requirements. Scott Moat, just last week, reported to both counsel in this case, based upon an inquiry from Relator's Counsel, that Mr. Beeler is doing excellent in his recovery with OLAP. Mr. Sakash has testified that with that commitment to recovery, the commitment to sobriety, he can continue to practice law. Physically and spiritually, he's on the right track. His law office is in the best shape it's ever been. Client files are now in order, and he's using the proper client inventories. As far as the sanction in this case, we must consider the mitigation evidence. We've talked a lot about alcohol, but let's not forget we've got remorse. We've got cooperation with the disciplinary process. We've got an absence of prior.
How did this come to the attention of the disciplinary counsel's office? I didn't ask Ms. Brown that, but do you know?
I'm sorry,
how did this matter come to the attention of the disciplinary counsel's office?
I'm not sure.
Who reported it? I guess that's my question. I'll ask Ms. Brown.
I'm not sure. Okay. I don't know. He has made restitution, $68,000, out of his own personal funds. His character evidence has been outstanding. The civic and community involvement is there as well. That's another mitigating factor that this court considers.
Counsel, you may have said, has he gone back through the inventory of documents that he has has had clients execute to cure any other latent defects that may exist in documents?
He has, Your Honor. He has gone back through with the stipulated probationary period, having a local attorney monitor his practice, which will include review of the files. Those types of tools of recovery will be in place.
If he has executed a will for somebody who's living that wasn't properly witnessed,
that's
they've
right.
been brought in to redo.
That's right. That's right. And having this probationary period again will assist in that process. As far as the sanction, in light of everything that we've talked about, anything more than 3 months is punishment. And that's not the purpose of the disciplinary system. It's to protect the public. This conduct will not happen again. Relators Council has assurance that it will not happen again. More time off will not assist with his recovery. He's doing very, very well with his recovery. He's committed to it, and the 2-year probationary period will assist in that recovery. So those are the tools of recovery that apply to these types of situations. As far as the case law, just a minute on that. The case law that we've cited in our brief supports, quite frankly, stayed suspensions when we have A4 violations. The Kinney, Hefter, Markajohn cases all support that. The Smith case was not an A4, but that was a case involving 8 disciplinary violations. Again, that was a stayed suspension.
Well, it was not a stayed suspension of 3 months, I wouldn't think. Or not, actually out 3 months, I wouldn't. We haven't done one of those in a long time, I don't think.
I believe there is authority for actual suspensions less than 6 months.
Well, we could do it, but it is not very practical because, as I said, by the time the lawyer advises the client that he or she is out of the practice, they're back in the practice.
Well, that practicality aside, it's our position that anything beyond that is now punishment, and that's not what the system is about.
The cases you cite in your brief, you noted Smith, the court adopted the board recommended sanction of 6 months stayed on condition that a mentor be consulted with. Some other cases, a 1-year suspension stayed on conditions, a 6-month suspension stayed in entirety. So are those the cases you're saying are similar to Mr. Beeler's case?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, those cases, some of those cases that we cited are A4, 10102 A4 violations, and even in those cases, we've got stayed suspensions. So we think that case law is certainly on par with what we're dealing with here. The other cases that were cited in Relator's brief, nowhere near the mitigation evidence that we have here, nowhere near, not one of those cases. Some of those cases involved actually stealing money from the estate and lying to clients about the whereabouts of money. So I think those cases are easily distinguishable from what we have here. So in conclusion, we believe that no more than a 3-month actual suspension is warranted here in light of all the mitigating evidence, and request that relator's objection be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Ms. Brown, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds. How did this matter come to the attention of the disciplinary council? How do you know?
A grievance was filed by Jackie Predmore with the assistance of her attorney. Just in order to clarify, the respondent raised the issue of Relator dismissing some of the Canon 7 violations. Relator did not dismiss all the Canon 7 violations, and one violation was, in fact, found in count one. The reason the violations were dismissed, if you look at the amended complaint, it was alleged in the amended complaint that the respondent, by attempting to transfer the property out of the Kinsley estate on January 30th, 2001, it looked for all the world like he was trying to evade estate tax responsibility by essentially devaluing the estate by transferring the property out. Once it was determined that the respondent would testify that he thought he was legitimately transferring it out, that he thought he could posthumously file warranty deeds and transfer property, we discovered that there was no reason to continue to maintain the Canon 7 violations, the ones cited by respondent in his oral argument. So that's the reason they were dismissed, not because we don't believe that the conduct was intentional. In fact, it was intended to achieve a specific result. For that reason, we ask this court to impose a suspension of 18 months upon Robert Beeler. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.